Friday, June 17th, the first day of my strange vacation, I spent the morning recording and walking the runway with the oldest suit of my boy, telling him where to shred and what to save, the thickest stands of Indian blanket, the yucca, and delightfully enough, a little of the tall red standing cypress that we had brought from the Weinheimer's place. And then, about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I decided I'd have my first try at walking the Pernales River. Clarence had gotten a map of the area between here and Johnson City. He told me he thought it was about 4.5 miles from the bridge over the Pernales as one heads toward the Scharnhorst place, down to the spot in the river pasture of the Scharnhorst where the road goes down to the river. Somebody else estimated it was about 2.75 miles. Anyhow, it sounded feasible, so I drove to the bridge, and about 5:30 the three of us started walking. Clarence and Jerry Kivett and I. It was still hot, but the best time of the day was approaching. Late evening in the long twilight. Clarence had on a pedometer, which he read from time to time. Once along the riverbank, I saw a group of bluebells, one in perfect bloom. It reminded me of Mrs. Johnson. And then, in a shallow little pool, absolutely motionless, we came upon a ribbon snake, about 3 feet long, a band of yellow running down each side, and along his back, a band of orange-red, perfect marking, beautiful and harmless. We let him be, although Clarence had his gun at the ready in case we found a rattlesnake. In another pool, there was a turtle, his carapace as mossy as some of the stagnant water that had been dried by the sun. Mostly we clung to the river's edge, walking sometime through sandbars, it was heavy going, sometime on limestone, with faults running across the river. Clearly defined, making rapids, whose murmur filled the air. Suddenly I said to Clarence, "Look to your left, but don't do anything." There, ambling in a dignified and unhurried manner, over the rocks and brush, was a skunk, his white tail waving. Not more than 15 feet from me, Clarence was closer. But the wind was in our favor. The skunk did not notice us. We stood motionless. He, or she, climbed up into a tangle of brush that well might have been a nest. We could still see the tail waving, but we went quietly on our way. Every now and then we passed a deep pool, cool and inviting, a good place to fish. And once we could see fair-sized fish, dozens of them, some 8 or 10 inches long. Suddenly, surprisingly, we came across a dam built by human hands, at least half of a dam, still firm and solid on the south side, completely broken in the middle and gone, no joining at all on the north side. Clarence's pedometer read 2.75 miles from our starting point. He had never heard of such a dam. A little ways down, we found huge boulders with projecting pieces of steel from them. We could see on the downriver side of the dam some of the steel emerging. And then a little farther down, we came to a road. Certainly not a very good road, but one could cross the river on it. That was 3 miles from the bridge. Sometimes fat black Angus grazed in the pasture across from us. Once we saw 2 deer. We'd just been down to get a drink at the river and were melting into the brush. And a little later, I heard a snort right behind me. Clarence didn't even turn his head. He said, "That's a deer. It's the alarm sound they give when they see somebody, so any other deer will know." Clarence's pedometer read 4, 5, and more miles. We stopped and I drank a bottle of beer. The sky was going through its beautiful drama of changing light, big pink powder puffs of clouds darkening at the edges as the light waned. Gradually we began to make jokes about just around that bend in the river. We'll come to the rapids, and then pretty soon we'll be at the Scharnhorst. We kept in touch by talking machine. Yes, Ben Blossoman and Dale Keener had gotten down to the Scharnhorst landing. No, they couldn't hear us. We had to go through volcano. We came to a big sandy hillock with dozens of small white eggs, all broken. Clarence said, "Turtle eggs." He turned them over with his foot and to decide whether they had hatched and the little turtles had gone, or whether some raccoon, a ringtail, had found them and eaten them. All the way in wet places we came across tracks, tracks, tracks. Sometimes a heron, whose feet must have been 5 inches long, frequently coon tracks, and then some that they thought might be a ringtail, and many deer. A killdee, a sandpiper, escorted us for miles and miles. It always seemed the same one. At first I thought we were disturbing his nest, and then when he stayed so long with us, I decided he was just interested in people. A gregarious fellow, with flights of glossy black-winged birds with bright red spots. Clarence didn't know their names. By now we were beginning to make jokes that didn't quite ring true about we would get there just as dark fell. And dark was getting closer and closer. Fine. Just before it really fell, in a sandy stretch, we came across some wide, winding track that curved very definitely and clearly for 20 feet or more down toward the river. Clarence said, "That's a snake track. He's a big fella." Here we were stepping over boulders, and it was hard to find our way. Clarence had called Daniel Keena at the car at the landing and ask him to send Ben Blossoman with a flashlight walking in our direction, because very soon there would be no light at all. Clarence was always in the lead. We were pretty silent now, just trying to keep together and keep our footing in the boulders and brush, watching for Ben's light in front of us. A little while before, Gary had called and asked for a Huey to come to the ranch and then await orders. The last time we looked at the pedometer, it had said something over 7 miles. We joked that that meant 10 feet east and then 20 feet north, climbing around a boulder, and then 30 feet south, and then on east again. It must have been about 8:15 when real dark fell. Suddenly, right in front of us to our right, we saw a flashlight. We heard Ben Blossoman's welcome voice. First thing we asked him, "How long have you been coming?" He said he thought about a mile and a half. Clarence said, "I'm going to shoot my gun, and in a minute you fire yours." They did. On the talking machine, he asked Dale Keener if he'd heard the shots. The answer came back negative. He asked Dale Keener to get the spotlight out of his car and shine it up into the sky, and then move it around in an arc. He couldn't see anything. We kept on walking. By now, it was pitch dark, but Ben had his flashlight, and I was right behind him. But the walking was ever so much more difficult. Solid terrain of boulders, and once out of them, into the brush. And there was a slough on our left, and we couldn't get across it. We began to joke with Ben about how much territory he'd covered, how fast he'd come. He said, "Yes." And y'all said, "Get that light and come." I just took out in a trot. Finally, an interminable distance down the river, it seemed, we saw a light moving steadily. It must be Dale Keena. And then Ben said, "Oh, it must not be more than another mile. But I had to come down some cliffs, and we'll have a little harder time going back up in the dark." Meanwhile, Jerry had called for Huey at the ranch. It had arrived. He'd asked it to proceed along the Pernellis River, about 500 feet up, until it saw our light. Presently, we emerged on what seemed to be a sort of a flat, heavily grassed area close to the river. They walked around it. It seemed safe for the helicopter to land in case it could find us. Dale's light at the car was still an interminable distance away. Jerry said, "We can bring him in here with this light. He can land right here with no trouble. There's no wires, no trees. I think it makes more sense for us to let him pick us up." Clarence agreed, and I rather shamefacedly said nothing, which amounted to agreement. Oddly enough, across the river, rather behind us, we could see a glow of light which must be Johnson City. There must be some tremendous bend in the river. We couldn't have passed Johnson City. Although when Clarence looked at his pedometer, it registered 9¾ miles. Very quickly, the bright firefly above us that was the Huey approached closer and closer, swung low, passed over us. Jerry said, "I'm going to put this light down in the center of the level space. You land right on it." And then we all retreated to the edge of the circle. Jerry said, "Turn the other way when he lands. There'll be some grass blowing." And sure enough, he came in, hovered low, settled down, and in a matter of minutes, we were in the cozy interior of the helicopter, the pilot with a big smile, and we began rising up into the air. I looked over to our left, and there in the supposedly level space was a big grassy ditch of some 15 feet deep. No trouble when walking, but I wondered if it would have troubled the helicopter. We were up in the air, following the river, and it's remarkable how many lights one can see from up high. It is as though the world is very well peopled. While down on the ground by the river, we thought we were really in the wilderness. It looked like there were a whole string of farmhouses up and down the river somewhere. We'd heard a turkey gobble and a dog bark, but we'd never seen any lights. And then in a few minutes we went home. We walked in. It was 9:15. I was famished. Jerry and Clarence were both grinning broadly, although I still felt a little shamefaced about the Huey. James brought me an old-fashioned, and I curled up in bed to look at the man from Uncle. Mary fixed me a tray of fried catfish and slaw, and then a hot bath and to bed. My only real worry is, if I do any more river walking, will I have any companions?